Hello, welcome back to Sports World Podcast, episode 34. I'm Aiden.
I'm Billy.
And I'm Alejandro.
And we are going straight into some NFL news. We got a lot about the Texans today. They've done some hiring and not very good decision-making.
No.
Yeah.
We went over this last episode of the podcast. Me and Aiden had a good conversation about the rumors that the Texans were going to hire Josh McCown as their head coach, and which was a totally ridiculous report. And even if they were actually considering it, which it seems like they were based off of other reports that we'll get to in a second, it's just totally ridiculous. We thought the Texans could not hire a person worse for the job than what Josh McCown is. Somehow
they managed to do just that.
Maybe not just that, but something very close. Mm-hmm. I don't think you could get closer
to as bad as Josh McCown as your head coach
than they got. So the Texans, they hired Ravens, not offensive coordinator, not defensive coordinator, passing game coordinator, David Culley.
And as we all know, the Ravens do not have a passing game.
No. They got Lamar Jackson, and to be fair, Lamar Jackson has improved his passing the last few years. He's gotten a little bit better. Still not what you'd want as an ideal NFL passing quarterback, really, at all. And Culley, really no previous experience as a head coach in the NFL. And the Texans are just so out of their mind right now, I can't comprehend the just stupid coming from that franchise. And it's been happening for a while. The Texans have never really made that many great decisions in their whole entire time as a franchise in the NFL. Starting out, of course, with the David Carr pick, which was a horrible pick, a bust. And now going into this. Now, their first really good pick that they've ever made was the Deshaun Watson pick. And somehow they've figured out how to screw that up and now make it even worse. This is probably one of the worst eras of Houston Texan football that I've ever seen in my life. This is just atrocious. So anyways, the Culley hire, totally against that one. I thought that was stupid. And again, Eric Bieniemy still out there.
Yeah.
And didn't get a head coaching job, which is totally ridiculous. I mean, that is one of the best offenses in recent memory that Eric Bieniemy has built up and coached. And you can say that it's the players, but you have to – I think everything's two-sided, and I think that the enemy is a really good offensive mind.
You can't give all the credit to one side or the other. It's always a bit of a balance between both.
Exactly, and I think the enemy just did a really good job in Kansas City. And I think that he is much better than David Culley will ever be. I think David Culley is fired at least 2 years from now. I don't give him – anywhere past that, and I don't think he'll have any success at all. I feel horrible for the fans of the Houston Texans. They seem pretty chill, and they understand that Deshaun wants out, and I respect that totally. And they understand how their franchise is just dying because of bad management, bad ownership,
and the inability to build around Deshaun Watson and J.J. Watt.
Yeah, just horrible management decisions that have killed the team. And McCown, that we've been talking about, for them possibly hiring him as a head coach, they're not looking at that anymore, obviously, because they hired David Culley. But now they're targeting Josh McCown, their practice squad quarterback, by the way, for an assistant head coaching job. Now, this could mean offensive coordinator. It could mean something lower than that. If they give him the OC position, I don't know what they're doing. They should start him off at a low assistant role. But if they were interviewing him for head coach, I wouldn't doubt that he's being interviewed for an OC job. And if he is, just, oh, my God. David Culley, and McCown as their two main offensive coaches is probably one of the biggest disasters waiting to happen in the history of the NFL. I mean, it's just really, really bad. Anyways, as soon as David Culley was hired as head coach of the Houston Texans, the fallout began. Deshaun Watson officially requested a trade out of Houston. I mean, we expected this anyways, but he officially said it.
Only a matter of time.
Yeah, I mean, he saw Culley come in and immediately said he wanted out. That was the last straw for him. I mean, it should tell you something about the coaching hire.
Makes you wonder maybe if they picked an Eric Bieniemy, if he would have been swayed a little bit more to stay. I still think he would have wanted out, though.
Yeah, there's reports that he wanted Bieniemy to some extent. But I think the bridge was pretty much burned.
Yeah.
At this point. And I think that even if they went back to hire Bieniemy to try to appease Watson, I think that it still would have been a failure in retaining Watson. I don't think anything can really get Deshaun Watson back, because that management and ownership has just destroyed him so much. Anyways, David Culley, in his press conference, once he got to Houston, he said the reason he's in Houston is, quote, because Watson will be a Texan.
Which is wrong.
It's wrong. And Nick Caserio, their GM, he said they have zero interest in trading Watson. Now,
and if they don't trade Watson, they're just going to be, like, they're going to have him on their payroll, and he's just going to not go to practice. He's not going to go to games. He might do, like, private workout sessions or whatever, but he's not going to be a part of the team. He's going to sit out. He's going to sit out and just force a trade, because there's no point in having that big of a contract sitting there when they're not contributing to your team.
Yeah. And I think what they're coming from here is that I think Culley was told by the ownership that they're not going to let Watson go, and they're going to keep him here until he tries to, you know, until he accepts that he's going to play for the Texans. And I just don't think that's true. I think that's a full-out lie. I think Caserio right now is trying to get Watson back, but Watson hasn't even been in contact with the team at all. So that should be a message to management that he doesn't want to be there anymore, and I think he's going to do whatever he can to get out of Houston. And putting this public smokescreen out that they want Watson back, they are not going to trade him, and all this is ridiculous. Just trade him. I mean, Watson wants out of there so bad, I think he would sit out the whole season, to be honest. And they can fine him to hell. Like, they can fine most of his salary for the whole entire season. I think Watson would still hold out because of endorsement deal money he can still get.
Yeah,
they can't find his whole salary, so he's still going to get a couple million. I just think he hates Houston so much in the management and the ownership there that he'd want out so bad that he probably would just sit. And I think they need to get this trade done right now, because having him sit on the bench for a year and having his trade value decline,
it's a waste of everyone's time, and it's going to divide the locker room.
Yeah, and it's going to kill. It hurts the Texans as well as hurting Watson at the same time, and it's just not going to work. And I think the best scenario, like last podcast, we said that Watson's out of there no matter what, and I still stand by that. I think Watson's out of the Texans no matter what. He's long gone. He's
absolutely
been gone for a couple weeks. And there's nothing that's going to be able to retain him to the Houston Texans. He is gone. And there's no chance he comes back. Absolutely no chance. Reportedly, Watson's preferred landing spot, if he is traded, which he will, is the Jets. The Panthers also were reported that they want to pursue Watson, which is kind of interesting because they still have Teddy Bridgewater there. Preferably with the Panthers, they have a lot of young weapons right now. I said a long time ago that I think the Panthers are one of the best young up-and-coming teams, along with the Broncos. I think they have great foundations of young players, and once they get over the hump, you know, they'll be very, very good teams. But I don't necessarily like Watson to the Panthers that much, because I still think they have value in draft picks right now, and I think they can do that pretty damn well. And I think they're leaning towards a draft prospect more than a Watson trade. Because if you can get a guy like Trey Lance, or maybe trade up and get Zach Wilson, or some Zach Wilson, or Fields falls down the draft board to you, I think keeping that pick and not having to give up a total load of picks and players and kind of destroying your future for Deshaun Watson, which could work in theory, but I would stick with the picks and draft a quarterback instead to develop under Bridgewater for maybe a year or so and then give him the reins. I think that's a better plan than maybe going after Watson, but either way, I think the Panthers will be all right. But keeping their foundation, I think, is really important with this Panthers team because I think they've built a great foundation around that team. So the other QB news besides for Deshaun Watson was Matthew Stafford. Now, Matthew Stafford, we've been expecting him to want out of Detroit for a little bit now, but he officially is parting ways with the Lions, according to reports. Stafford will work with the front office to get a trade done, and some potential destinations will be the 49ers, the Colts, the Patriots, the Cowboys, which is an interesting one because they suddenly re-signed Dak Prescott, but apparently they are checking in with Stafford per some sources. Another destinations are the Jets, the Bears, and the Panthers as well. Right now, the Panthers seem like they're in on some guys now. Again,
I think the Panthers are kind of just exploring their options. I think Watson would definitely be a better choice for them.
Yeah.
If they were to go for something that isn't building through the draft, just because he's younger, and the Panthers are looking like a team that's just going to try and build on young assets, and what they would be getting out of Stafford is not really something that fits what their team is kind of shaping up to be. So it's just it's interesting to see because a lot of the teams – you see a lot of the same teams that are interested in Watson are also interested in Stafford.
It's a big QB market.
Being basically the teams that are in need of a quarterback, and you kind of have to – judge off of, do you want to develop or do you want to try and win now? So I could see the Bears being a good option for Stafford. I think most of the teams on the list that we said, the 49ers, Colts, Patriots, Cowboys, Jets, Panthers, they're probably all going to be looking to get a Watson or through the draft type thing because I feel they're going to focus more on building towards their future, because none of those teams are really in win now mode. The only team I could really see turning into like a good team would be the Bears, just because they have a few good receivers, they have a good defense, and I think if you put Stafford in there and he adjusts well, that could be a good team. Not winning a Super Bowl, but they could make it in the playoffs.
I think some teams there do have playoff potential and Super Bowl potential if you gave Stafford the reins. Teams like the Colts, I think I prefer the Colts as the best destination for Stafford because I think the Colts have a great foundation around them right now. They have a great defense led by Darius Leonard and DeForest Buckner, guys like that, and a lot of young players. They also have a great backfield with Nyheim Hines and Jonathan Taylor, Marlon Mack once he gets back from injury, and then you got wide receivers like Pittman and T.Y. Hilton already there. And they inserted Phillip Rivers, which I think is far – Phillip Rivers, as his career, was amazing. But his last year and the year before that with the Chargers, far worse than what Matthew Stafford is right now. And I think if you plug Matthew Stafford in there, he's an actual really good quarterback that I think that can bring the Colts to possibly AFC Championship, maybe even a Super Bowl if they could go that far. Because I think they have great coaching under Frank Reich, and I think that they can do a lot there. I think the 49ers also are a good team there. They lost Robert Saleh, their DC, who held them together through a lot. But then again, their defense is still very good, and their wide receivers great with Ayuk, Deebo Samuel, and Kittle obviously is there. And good backfield with Mostert. So I think Stafford in those situations could be really good. Him on the Patriots, I preferably want as a Patriots fan, but I don't think that he could work well with the limited weapons that the Patriots do have. Although I think the Patriots will do some things in free agency, and I think if he went to the Patriots, guys like Kenny Golladay would follow him over there. But I just don't think that could really work out too well. Reportedly, also, the Rams are contending for Stafford, which doesn't make a ton of sense. I mean, Goff hasn't been playing too well, but Stafford on the Rams could work, and it definitely would, but I don't think they should move on from Goff just yet, and I don't think they're really in the position because there's reports that the Rams want to have a QB competition between Goff and John Wolford, which is concerning for Goff, but if they want to set up a QB competition, it doesn't really make sense to bring in Stafford there. And again, what are you going to do with Goff? Because I don't think the Lions are going to take on Goff's contract or anything. So you're going to have to cut him. And I'm not sure exactly what the dead cap hit would be on that. But Goff's contract is very large. And I think the cap hit would be pretty bad on that. So I don't think the Rams really want to do that, especially with the cap situation that they still have, which isn't too good. But we'll see on that. Now, if Stafford is traded to the 49ers, which is looking very, very possible right now, there is a good possibility that Jimmy Garoppolo comes back to the New England Patriots, which I think is super interesting and would be very good for the Pats. Bill Belichick wanted Jimmy Garoppolo as the future of the franchise, and Garoppolo performed well while in New England. I mean, his first season, he had to play the first four games, but he got injured. But he played the first two games. He played against the Cardinals, which were a good team at that time. And the Dolphins, which he got injured in.
Yeah.
But both games, he played really well.
He was showing really good promise.
Yeah, I mean, the impact that he gave to the 49ers when he went there, they win so much more when Jimmy's playing than when they're losing, which I think is a kind of a negative to why the 49ers even want to go and trade Garoppolo, because he's been the guy that has been making them win, whether
the only
injury
for
the
him there
factor.
Is that he's just getting injured every year.
Yeah, I mean, that's the real problem. But in terms of play, I think he's fine. He's in a run-heavy offense, but if you just look at the common factors, when Garoppolo's out, they lose. When Garoppolo's in, they win.
Yeah.
So even if it doesn't show up in the statistical stat sheet, they win when Garoppolo plays. And that's the common factor, and I think that's good for them. And I think that Garoppolo's sticking in San Francisco, I would probably go with that. But I know they don't want to do that, and I know that's not what's going to happen. So we'll see. But Garoppolo possibly going to the Pats is very interesting. Belichick, as I said, he was the future, and Kraft forces him to trade Garoppolo because Kraft wanted Brady, which was the right decision. But now Belichick has the open opportunity to go get Jimmy Garoppolo, and we have to wait and see if he goes and gets him. If he doesn't go and get Garoppolo, then I guess he wasn't the future all along, and he just didn't plan for that, or he sees something better in the draft or elsewhere, and we'll see about that. There was also a report that the Patriots had a chance at a Stephon Diggs trade last March when the Bills traded a first-round pick for Diggs. They had the opportunity to match it with a first-rounder, and they decided not to. Now, this could have maybe propelled Brady to come back to the Patriots or not, but definitely interesting to see if Brady would have came back because of Diggs or not, or how that would have affected Cam Newton. I mean, Newton couldn't throw to anything this year, so I don't know how he'd do with Diggs. Our one criticism of the Diggs trade last year was that Josh Allen couldn't throw accurately to Stephon Diggs, but he evolved, and Diggs became one of the best wide receivers in football, and Allen one of the best quarterbacks in football when they were put together. So you could argue that Cam could have had a better season if he had a guy like Diggs, but I'm happy with the result of Kyle Duggar and Uche and those guys
coming out of the draft instead of getting a Diggs. I'm fine with that. And I think that Duggar and Uche will probably play really well. I don't think they'll ever get to the point that Stephon Diggs will in terms of impact on a team. But I think necessarily the Pats will be fine and get weapons other than Diggs and didn't really need to take that risk, especially in a year where I think Brady was gone anyways. And I don't think there was really anything.
I think Brady was ready for a new challenge.
Yeah, I didn't see him staying in New England anyways. So I think he was gone regardless, especially when you had that stacked team in Tampa Bay waiting for him. So I think he was gone regardless. Mac Jones is actually looking pretty good at the Senior Bowl practice. That's another guy the Patriots interviewed. They interviewed Jamie Newman and Mac Jones, the only two quarterbacks at the Senior Bowl that they interviewed. Jones said that he liked the franchise very much, and apparently he's showing out and looks like one of the best QBs at the Senior Bowl, which is good because Jones at Alabama was throwing to the best wide receivers in the country, and a lot of people look at him as a QB who is really only good because of the talent around him, and the Senior Bowl kind of disproves that in a way. And if he can actually come out into the Senior Bowl game and play really well, like his practice has shown, then that can boost him up draft boards and possibly even get him into the first round, which the Patriots at 15 could really take a deep look at Mac Jones and see if there's actually something there for them to draft instead of getting someone else or getting someone in the late rounds or anything like that. So now on to the NFC Championship and AFC Championship games. First, let's start off with the Buccaneers and the Packers. This game was a close game throughout the whole entire thing. Aiden, last week, he chose the Buccaneers.
I did.
I chose the Packers. Aiden was right on that one. I'll give him that. I bet against Brady, and I'm probably going to
never bet against Brady.
I'll probably do it again in the Super Bowl, and I'll probably regret it again. Mm-hmm. But I bet against Brady, I think, almost every week, besides for wild card weekends, something like that. But I bet the Saints would beat the Bucks. I bet the Packers would beat the Bucks. So I've been on a bad track record with this. Anyways, the Bucks beat the Packers 31-26. Brady threw for 280 yards and three touchdowns. He did have three interceptions, which were – it was ugly.
Yeah.
The defense played amazing.
Yet again, Brady getting carried by a defense, but yeah.
Yeah, Brady did make some good throws, but the defense really, really carried him here. And
Brady
Rodgers'
really
bad
rely.
Decisions on the other side did as well.
Brady seemed to really rely on the fact that he had really good receivers downfield and was just hoping that they'd be on the other end.
Brady did have some really good throws, though. He had a nice little drop in pass to Mike Evans that was right in the basket earlier in the game. And then the Scotty Miller throw right before halftime. I can't believe he got past King on that route. King was a disaster that whole entire game in the Packers secondary.
King
horrible.
Gifted the Bucks an NFC championship.
Yeah, that was just really, really bad. I compared him on Twitter to Eric Rowe in Super Bowl 52 against Alshon Jeffrey. So true in my mind. I mean, Eric Rowe was horrible against Alshon Jeffrey. I figured he was the reason the Pats lost that Super Bowl. That people don't talk about it, but I think he was. And Kevin King is probably the reason the Packers lost this NFC championship game, along with Rodgers' mistakes and not running instead of passing, and then LaFleur going for the field goal at the end, which was bizarre.
Yeah, completely. I didn't really understand why they would kick the field goal when they're so close to that end zone already.
And so much, like, little time remaining there, too. You couldn't really do much. And you had to get all the way downfield if you wanted to win. Just take the shot there, honestly. I believe they were down 8. So taking the shot to the end zone and they were, like, inside the 10-yard line. I don't understand why they didn't do that. Anyways, Rodgers on the other side, he threw for 346 yards, three touchdowns, and one interception. Aaron Jones on the ground was stopped. He only had 6 carries, but he rushed for 27 yards. I believe got injured. And then A.J. Dillon and Jamal Williams took carries at that, but they didn't get past the 27 yards that Jones put up at all. So the Buccaneers' run defense really came up clutch in that game. Really, really good. And the secondary was good as well. Carlton Davis and Sean Murphy Bunting did really well back there. Antoine Winfield didn't even play, who's their safety, and they still did really good against Rodgers. And Rodgers really couldn't get anything going. Rodgers was under pressure almost every single snap because of his line couldn't block the amazing rush defense that the Bucs have in Shaq Barrett, Jason Pierre-Paul, Ndamukong Suh. Vita Vea was back for a couple snaps in that game coming off an injury, but he's a big run stopper and he did really good there. So Rodgers was under duress almost every single snap. Brady could sit in the pocket against that Packers defense all game and really just tear him apart. Still threw three picks, which I'll put on him, but just really rough outing for Rodgers. Despite good numbers, it was rough for him. And the team really didn't give him a lot of help. And I think the Bucs defense was the reason why they won this game. Brady was definitely a huge factor, but overall, the Buccaneers defense was the reason they won the NFC Championship.
I think if Brady didn't throw those three picks, the game would have been a lot easier for them. Brady made the game a lot more interesting and difficult for the Bucs.
Definitely. Definitely. And I think if the Packers offensive line could just block, I think Rodgers would have a lot easier time, maybe even going for over 400 yards instead of 346. But we'll never be able to see that reality because it's already gone.
Yep.
Rodgers, after the game, he said a lot of guys' futures are uncertain, myself included. This set off a lot of people saying that Rodgers was going to leave. Mike Florio from Pro Football Talk, he put out potential destinations after this quote, basically based off of just guessing, I'm assuming not logic. I mean, you can't form a list of potential suitors of a player right after he says something. So kind of ridiculous. But anyways, this was the list. 49ers, Patriots, Steelers, Raiders, Colts, and Saints. First of all, the Saints don't have cap room. They're $90 million under the cap. There's no way they can fit Aaron Rodgers' contract. So that one's totally out of the blue and not realistic. The Colts could work. The Raiders are interesting because they have Derek Carr, but they need to get something to get them over the hump. And Rodgers is a California boy, so that would work out well. Steelers, again, wouldn't work. I don't think Roethlisberger is actually going to retire because he's talking like he's not going to, which is concerning for the Steelers, I think, because I think Roethlisberger is not well. I think he should have retired a while ago, like I've reiterated over and over again. The Patriots, interesting, but they really need to rebuild their team, so I don't know if that could fit into the cards there. And the 49ers, they're in on Watson, they're in on Stafford, so they seem like they're willing to give up a lot of picks and a lot of things to win now. And
the 49ers seem to really be just testing the field with everyone that's available.
Yeah, so I think the 49ers could work there. And again, Rodgers, California guy, so that could work out really well for them as well. Another report came out from Pro Football Talk that Rodgers wanted a new contract with the Packers, so totally contradicting things that they put out here. Rodgers is a new contract. I don't think it's going to happen. I think once his contract expires, he's gone because they got Jordan Love back there and they spent a first-round pick on him. And it's going to come up some way or another that Rodgers is going to be ousted out of there. And I think his contract expiring is probably what's going to happen. I don't see a trade happening really. Rodgers took 3 years to take Brett Favre out of his spot as starting quarterback. And I think we're looking at the same time frame here. I don't think Rodgers is going to be traded. I think that's an overreaction. But we'll see. We'll see what happens. And, yeah. So we're going to take a quick ad break. We'll be back with a little bit of AFC Championship talk. Then we'll get into the NBA, MLB, and some soccer. And we're back with the AFC Championship. So the AFC Championship was between the Chiefs and the Bills. I, last week, chose the Chiefs. Aiden chose the Bills.
This time I was right and he was wrong.
My wrong was a bit more drastic, though.
Yeah, this one was 38-24 final score. It was a little...
In the first quarter, I was a bit excited, I won't lie. The Bills were looking like they might have pulled through with it, but I also knew the Chiefs were going to come out in that second half and just start slapping them around. So,
as we said last week, the Chiefs do start slow, but when they get going and they do not stop. And that's exactly what they did in this game. They took back the lead from the Bills, and they never let it go. The Bills were really stagnant. The Chiefs' defense, very good against Josh Allen and these Bills.
The muffed punt, I thought the Bills were going to start running away with it. Mm-hmm. And the moment they missed the field goal after they scored that touchdown, I knew the momentum was going to swing. I just felt it.
Yeah, and Josh Allen, as I said, just I think he's too young a quarterback, and he'll definitely recover from this. He said after the game that they will be back, and I strongly believe that. I think the Bills are a good franchise right now. They're young, and they have a lot of momentum behind them, and I think they'll be a strong force in the AFC and in the NFL for at least the next 5 years. Because they have the cap to do it, they have the young players to do it, and they have the superstars to do it, and Allen and Diggs and guys like that. They need to get their run game figured out, though, because Devin Singletary could do nothing against that Chiefs run defense and Chris Jones.
They should draft a running back.
They really should. I mean, Zach Moss they had, but maybe going for a running back high this year could be beneficial for them. Because
getting a solid running back that's going to be more consistent will really help push them over the edge that they were kind of stuck on. Mm-hmm. Because they were forced into really only passing it because they couldn't get anything established in the on the ground.
Yeah. And Josh Allen had 77 yards on the ground, I believe. So he was their leading rusher, which isn't a good thing, especially in a playoff game when you want your running backs to play well. I mean, in both games, the running backs actually kind of played bad on both sides. That Bucks running back Fournette, I think, only went for like 58 yards. Jones, as I said, in the Packers only went for 27. The Chiefs, I think, had the best rushing day with Edwards-Helaire, Damian Williams, guys like that. But overall, the Bills' rushing attack with Singletary, Zach Moss, was not good at all. Anyways, Mahomes went for 325 and 3 touchdowns, 0 interceptions, effective as usual. Tyreek Hill, the wide receiver, had 9 receptions for 172. They went off completely. Allen had 287, 2 touchdowns, 1 interception, 77 rushing yards. So he played pretty well, but we'll see what happens next week in the Super Bowl, which should be interesting. Next week's episode will be very nice. We'll give our Super Bowl picks then. We're not going to give them now. But Chiefs versus Bucks should be an interesting game. Chiefs definitely put out a good performance here against the Bills. And the Bucks showed that they are Super Bowl worthy and that maybe they can live up to that hype that they've had and the good roster that they have, and maybe they can overcome Bruce Arians' bad coaching. But we'll see then. So let's get into some NBA stuff. So the Nets have reportedly expressed interest in Kevin Love. Love has only played 2 games this year. He averaged 9.5 points per game, 6 rebounds in 23 minutes during those games. What do you guys think about that?
That'd be an interesting move, but given his large extension he signed with the Cavaliers a few years ago, I struggle to see how they'd be able to fit that.
Yeah, I don't see how they'll be able to do that. And plus, what are the Nets going to give up?
Exactly.
They have nothing. They gave up all their picks to the Rockets.
And they gave up all the young pieces from that 2019 team except for Dinwiddie.
Yeah.
He's injured right now.
And, I mean, they don't have any bench pieces to trade for him. So what would they give up at all? Like, are they going to give up their 28, 29, 23 first-round picks?
Yeah.
Like, I don't know what they do there. So
I think it's the rumor, yeah.
Yeah, Love's the concept of Love getting over there could be interesting. There's also the Drummond rumor that he wants to buy out.
Yeah, that one has more to it because if it's true, obviously, because obviously you doubt like how they would fit. How they would fit Love's contract, how they'd get him over there, and then also how he fit playing wise. But with Drummond, obviously they've needed a center. And plenty of people will tell you he's overrated, this and that. He's still a good NBA center.
Yeah. DeAndre Jordan's not doing it for him.
Yeah, exactly. But you know, Andre Drummond will, and maybe being on a contender motivates him even further. But at very least, he's a good NBA center who can rebound and is a presence in the paint. So that one has more to it because there's actually the buyout part. Like he's literally just buyout.
Yeah, and we've been saying that Drummond, ever since he really got traded there, was not there to stay necessarily.
Yeah.
He was planned on leaving a while. I'm surprised that he's lasted this long.
That's what I was going to say. Yeah, I'm surprised that Drummond and Love and all those players are still there because they've been there for like a while.
Yeah.
And given the other moving pieces, Sexton and Garland, I would have thought that they'd already moved them.
And they're kind of like the Love trade thing kind of makes sense in a way because they're doing fine without him and exactly. He's not in the long-term plans. But to the Nets, they don't have the assets to do it. They don't have the cap space to do it. It would have to be a buyout of sorts or something like that, or even cut him, which I don't think is beneficial because you can trade him somewhere else and they can get a good package for him. But they're doing fine with Sexton, Garland, Jared Allen, who's been an immediate contributor to the Cavs. I think they're doing fine with those pieces. So getting rid of Kevin Love, getting rid of Drummond – is probably in the cards for them.
For extra pieces, for extra like picks, pieces, young players, role players, something because they have a solid foundation over there.
I just don't think the Nets really have the assets to get either.
Yeah.
To be honest. The only way that I think they could get them is if the Drummond gets that buyout to go.
And then you also think of like a pay cut.
Yeah.
That'd be interesting though because I'm just giving up nothing, just fixing like their only problem really.
Yeah, and with Drummond, I think they'd be a real force
because we've seen them. They have no problem scoring the ball, but interior, especially in the East, that's gonna be a problem because there's Giannis, there's Embiid, there's
a lot of good players down there.
And then if you're trying to go into the finals, I mean LeBron, AD. That's what they do.
They pick you apart in the paint.
In the interior, yeah.
So they definitely – they got the perimeter covered for sure, but they need something.
We've already seen them. I mean, if your starter playing like 30 to 40 minutes, they can easily have at least one of – or two, Kyrie, Harden, and KD all game.
Mm.
So that like solves usually the scoring, but they just need defense.
There's other reports that the Pelicans are open to trading Lonzo Ball, J.J. Redick, and Eric Bledsoe, which I think is probably the best move for them. Pelicans right now, I think, are 6-10, I want to say. Let's see.
Yeah, they're 7-10.
7-10. Okay, one more win.
Yeah, they're close to the bottom down there.
Yeah, they're not – I don't think they're really going to be in contention this year. So, and Redick and Bledsoe, they're older guys. They're for immediate –
that one makes more sense. More surprising to a lot of people would probably be Lonzo.
Yeah. I just don't think Lonzo really has the potential that the Pelicans want. I think they're starting to see that he's not all that. And I just don't think they necessarily want him anymore.
Yeah.
I think they can find other point guard options instead of Lonzo. And I think that you can still get a pretty strong package. I think they're trying to move on from him before he falls off.
Yeah, overall, he still hasn't like gone to shooting. He's still having problems making decisions sometimes. His last game he against the Bucks, he shot efficiently, scored 27 and 8 assists. He scored 7 threes.
Yeah. I think they're trying to get him out while his value is
really inconsistent sometimes.
Yeah. I just don't think they can do – the consistency is definitely a problem. And I don't think they believe he can do it with consistency. And I think that's why they're trying to get him out. His value is still high. And if they wait another year, his value could completely plummet. And I think he's going into free agency as well. So they want to get rid of him before he potentially leaves because – LeVar and Lonzo have been talking about him trying to get max extensions and all that, and we know that's not going to happen. But if they try to push for that and the Pelicans just resist it,
you're losing him for nothing.
Yeah, and I mean, I think he's going to want an outlandish contract no matter what, and I just don't think the Pelicans are prepared to do that for him.
Because they're going to have to get Ingram on a big contract if they want to secure him.
Yeah, and they realize that they're not going to be able to re-sign Lonzo to a huge contract, so they'd rather just let him rather trade him now, get value for him, and then let someone else deal with that contract negotiation, which will probably be complete hell for whatever team is with negotiating with Lonzo. So that should be interesting. J.J. Redick would be a good bench shooter for about any contending team out there right now, and it would Celtics could definitely use Redick. I definitely think
Sixers could use him.
Sixers could as well. Although Seth Curry has been shooting amazingly.
He's been shooting the lights out
for the 76ers.
Who else needs like a shooter off the bench?
You could put someone on the Bucks. They could get another one.
Yeah,
that'd be terrifying.
But they're pretty good.
They don't really need one. I think the Celtics are probably the main one that need him, but I don't think Danny Ainge is really going to look to be trading any of his pieces.
If the Suns want to make a deep run, get him off the bench.
Oh, that could
be. You could have Booker and then sub Redick, and you got your interchangeable, really, really good shooters out there.
I could also. I could see maybe like Grant Williams, maybe a second round pick or something like that for Redick.
Yeah, I could see that with the Celtics, definitely. Definitely could see that. The Jazz right now are the best team in the West.
Somehow.
Surprisingly, no one's talking about them, but
And they haven't even had Donovan Mitchell consistently for games.
Yeah,
Mike Conley has been playing really well.
Gobert as well, maybe even living up to that max contract. But we're not going to say that.
We're not saying that just yet. Not just yet.
We're holding out hope that maybe he doesn't play as well as he is. Although he's on my fantasy team, so maybe.
If there's someone out of the West, I'm going to root for it'll be the Jazz.
Yeah,
there's not really a player on there that I don't like.
Yeah. I mean, Redick to the Jazz could make sense. It could definitely make sense.
I could definitely see that.
Edged up. But we'll see. Bledsoe, don't know. Don't know about Bledsoe. Contending team would probably need
him. I would like to see him go to the Hornets just so he can be on the same team as his dad.
Yeah. Yeah, that would be interesting. Terry Rozier and Eric Bledsoe. That definitely would be interesting.
Be a good matchup.
A lot of point guards on that team, though.
That's very true.
A lot of point guards.
And it would just be another person to piss off LeVar Ball for starting over LaMelo.
Yeah. MJ does love his point guards, though. He has a full collection of them over there. And they're not nearly as good as any of their contracts. So
Rozier has been playing well, but still, I don't think he's playing up to the contract that he's on.
Yeah. The Warriors and the Pelicans have reportedly talked to Kelly Oubre trade. Now, this would, I think, revolve around Lonzo Ball for Kelly Oubre.
Kelly Oubre started off the season pretty shakily.
Yeah.
He started to kind of come into it, but still not really
doing
anything.
It's two players that have highs and they have their lows. They're just really inconsistent.
Yep.
And a good swap there.
Trading inconsistency for inconsistency.
Yeah. It works out for both teams, I think. Just inconsistency for inconsistency. Warriors will not be in a position to re-sign Lonzo after the season. So he'd probably have to go somewhere else, but more of a win-now move. Which the Warriors right now, I don't think, are in a win-now situation.
No, they're in a build-around Wiseman. Hope
yeah.
Thompson and Curry stay healthy.
They're more of a next-year type of team.
Yeah.
I don't think they really have anything to bring.
I think next year when Wiseman has some more experience under his belt, when Thompson's back, trying to make a
decent,
bit of a push.
Yeah. The
only thing they're really lacking is depth.
Because they'd have Curry, Thompson, Wiggins, Green, and then Wiseman.
It's a pretty good lineup.
Yeah.
They just don't have anything off the bench.
Yeah. And
they have Brad Wanamaker.
They got Pascal. not much.
That's about it.
That's it.
They have eight.
They have a guy from Mexico.
Yeah.
I forget his name.
He's been playing pretty decent.
Shows his bench depth for you.
Damian Lee's been playing decent, I guess.
Yeah, Damian Lee. But we'll see about them. A good news for the day. Isaiah Thomas and former NBA player Joe Johnson, they're going to play in the America Cup for Team USA. this is going to be basically used as kind of a tryout for Isaiah Thomas to come back into the NBA. Probably should have already been signed back into the NBA, in my opinion. Probably.
Yeah, there are some definitely some players sitting on fringe roster spots that shouldn't.
I think we can all agree that Isaiah Thomas is a better point guard than a lot of teams' backup point guards.
Yeah,
definitely.
Especially because he's got the experience. He's a good leader. He's like a nice guy. He's a good locker room presence. I just don't see any issue. I don't see any reason why not to want him.
I mean,
and he's willing to take a minimum.
Yeah.
He just wants to play basketball. I really don't see any negative of signing him.
I mean, why is Brad Wanamaker sitting on a roster when Isaiah Thomas isn't?
King of the fourth quarter.
Confuses me.
King of the fourth quarter.
Confuses me.
Not even, there are definitely worse players than Brad Wanamaker.
There definitely is, but that's the one that's in my mind because we were just talking about him. But
LaMelo Ball.
Yeah.
I would take IT over LaMelo Ball any day.
Yeah, I don't know about that one, but there's definitely
just
worse.
Because I don't like that family.
Definitely worse than Isaiah Thomas that are out there in the America Cup. And Joe Johnson, I didn't know he was still playing basketball, but
I didn't
either,
but good for him.
Yeah.
I knew he played in the Big Three league, and he did well there. And then he got signed to an NBA contract, I think. But then whatever team had him, I think it was the Pistons. This might have been last year. It's all one, all together. But he got cut from that anyways. So I guess he's playing for Team USA 2 now, which is good. But, yeah, we'll see about that. Good luck to Isaiah Thomas. It's going to be great to see him back playing. And hopefully he can get a contract because he really deserves one at this point. He's been trying to secure one ever since he got cut last year. And definitely should get a contract somewhere. I mean, it's talent just going to waste. Out there.
Yeah, he's not even that old, and he's still only like 32, isn't he?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's just such a waste of talent.
He's 32 in February.
Even with the injuries that have kind of taken him down, I mean, he's still a really good role player.
Yeah, no, he can.
And he could also be really good. He just knows the game so well. Help develop a young point guard, give him some advice.
Amazing work ethic as well. I mean, trying to get back. And he's been showing that off. His work ethic
he was injured.
Yeah, before he was injured.
He
was injured. Yeah. And even still, nobody signed him, which is surprising. So.
And upsetting.
Yeah, very upsetting.
Because we know he's not asking for a lot of money. Because he's signed multiple minimum deals.
He's definitely looking for a minimum. He's just looking for a chance. I mean, I'm surprised someone hasn't even given him a 10-day. It's kind of ridiculous.
I want him to come back to Boston.
Yeah, me too.
Because we need someone who's played in the NBA for more than two seasons.
And some good shooting.
On our bench.
Yeah.
Especially with Peyton Pritchard injured.
Mm. So now into the standings, some interesting takes out here. The Heat are actually 13th in the East after coming off of a finals appearance, which they played really well.
And they didn't really lose any assets.
Yeah, they're 6-12 right now. Really struggling.
They're really struggling with fitness. Jimmy Butler's barely played because of injury, and then he got the virus. So he's barely played. And then when he's played, he's been out of form. The lineup's been changing a lot, and they're struggling. So now, obviously, there's a reason why they're not doing so well, but now it's like, can they get out of the hole that they've created, that they're stuck in?
It's going to be tough for them. I think they'll be able to get out of the hole. I think they're a playoff team, obviously.
I think they'll pull it into a playoff spot.
I don't know if they can really get up.
They might make their path really difficult by being in a low seed, though, because of this bad start.
I think they'll probably end up around the 6-5 area, somewhere around there, I think. Because, I mean, you got the 76ers, the Celtics, the Nets, good teams like that.
Bucks.
Over there. I think they'll end up in the mids around there. I don't think they're going to be the top. I don't think.
Especially after the start. I honestly think they're going to be at play-in at most.
Yeah. I think they could do some damage in the playoffs like they did, but I think they're definitely making the playoffs. I don't think they're going to be a high seed, and I think they're maybe a second-round exit, but I think they're going to play decently enough to make somewhat of a run, but I don't think if they don't add another piece, like a Bradley Beal or something like that,
if they add a Bradley Beal, then that's some serious.
Then they can.
Because Bradley Beal has shown that he is able to play big minutes, big production, and he's not very injury prone, which is very good.
76ers are also first in the East. They're 13-6. I don't think I got much long-staying power in the first spot, or really, I don't think they're going to be able to do too well in the playoffs. I mean, they were swept last year in the bubble, so.
Well, yeah, probably going to pull up, like, yeah, they didn't have Ben Simmons, but yeah, it's been, honestly, they've been pretty impressive, especially after the Lakers win.
I mean, and this year, they don't have Scott Brown either.
Yeah.
They got Dr. Rose. So they have someone who's smart.
They have an actual coach.
Yeah.
And that's kind of showing.
That was definitely their biggest requirement.
Also, Tyrese Maxey has been playing really well from them. Low draft pick in the early 20s, but performing really well. I think he put up, his high was like 37 points so far this season.
Yeah, it's like really in the game where they had barely enough players.
Yeah. And Thibault has been playing well in defense. Defensively, Simmons doing his thing.
Seth Curry.
Embiid is playing amazing.
Yeah,
Seth Curry has been really efficient.
Seth Curry has been.
Embiid's probably like top three in MVP right as of right now.
Yeah. I'm still
Jokic,
on the pitch, though.
And
probably LeBron.
Yeah. Tim Jokic and LeBron.
KD, if he was maybe.
Possibly. I could see KD.
If he didn't sit out a few games.
But I think his
I think
his numbers are going to start going down because of how many other options they have around him.
Yeah, and the Nets are kind of disappointing since the trade.
Yeah,
and they're still doing fine. They're probably going to get a high seed because they're still second right now.
Yeah,
but given the expectation, the Lakers still have a better record and everything.
Mm.
Yeah,
the Nets are interesting. They're working. They just put up 147 tonight, I think, against OKC.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they did.
So they definitely can play well, but they lost to the Cavs twice, I believe. But they're just starting to get going. They're getting into the groove. I think by mid-season, if the egos don't clash and fall apart like I was speculating earlier, they haven't so far. But if they don't and they get to mid-season and they're fine chemistry-wise,
I think if
they'll be dangerous.
If we get to the three-quarter mark on the season and there haven't been any big lapses, then I think it's going to show promise. Because once we got to like halfway, a little bit past halfway, that's when we saw it wasn't going to work out with the Celtics.
Yeah, and if you look at their games, they lost the two against the Cavaliers, but they've won four straight since. But against the Heat and the Hawks, it's been shootouts. 128, 124, win by four, and then 132, 128.
Again, the defense and the paint, that's not there really.
And it's
kind of showing.
And the Hawks game went to overtime. Like, those aren't games that you really want to do as a contender, just wasting energy in the regular season going to overtimes and shootouts against like every team.
Yeah,
they really need help with their defense.
Yeah,
for sure. The Celtics are fifth in the East. They're 10-7 right now. Jason Tatum's been out for a while, so that's probably what's responsible for that. Jaylen Brown, though, has
been
playing amazing.
Ridiculous season. And
he's averaged 27. Yeah,
he's
been playing amazing in the mid range.
Something really surprising for a Celtics team, though, is that the defense really has been what's been disappointing them.
Yeah.
The defense, and you could also say the shooting, as well, especially because of their absence of Tatum.
Exactly.
But usually the defense isn't something that you really have to worry about with a Celtics team.
Or a Brad Stevens
Smart
team, yeah.
Especially when it has Marcus Smart. But it is
Smart has
is a bit concerning for the Celtics.
It just seems like their effort, like you can just question it. Like
Smart has been disappointing.
Like their last game.
Defense.
Yeah, defensive, but offensively he's been pretty good.
Yeah.
Like the last game against the Spurs was pretty disappointing. Like
you
can't have a second quarter like that. I mean, they had an amazing third quarter and they even took the lead again, but then they all eventually crumbled in the fourth.
Like they
I would rather see Marcus.
But you shouldn't expect to win a game.
I would rather see Marcus average 5 points a game and be absolutely drained from all the effort he gives on defense and give us zero offensive production than having offensive production but not giving
us that
defensive.
But at the same time, they do need his offensive production right now.
We do, but I feel like
because they're, I mean, last game
his
Spurs,
his leadership on defense is probably the most crucial aspect of him on the team, I would say.
Well, yeah, but last night, the Spurs were the biggest problems, like points in the paint and turnovers. And I mean, Tatum especially, he had three turnovers off, like just inbounding. Like, that's lazy. Mm-hmm. you can't be giving the ball off inbounds three times in the game.
Tatum's had the turnover.
I hope Brad talked to him because, I mean, he's the star, but you can't just give up three. And they also and they score on two of them just right away.
Especially against the 76ers, the Spurs, which aren't – they're a good coach team, obviously, because of Popovich. But not the best team. They're not star-studded, really. I mean, they got Aldridge and DeRozan, but
they beat the Nuggets yesterday, so they're trying – I mean, they're having impressive games, but that was definitely a game that the Celtics should have taken. And they were – I mean, Tatum played fine. Brown played fine. Well, obviously, they had mistakes, but, like, they had offensive production. They should have probably taken it.
Yeah.
But they just had a lot of defensive errors. They went cold for long stretches. The zone defense was pretty good for them for a while in the third.
Yeah, so in the West, the Jazz are first with a 14-4 record, best team in the league, which is pretty amazing for the Utah Jazz.
They're on a 10-game winning streak right now.
Yeah. I mean, pretty damn good for them. Hopefully they can do something with that. I don't think it's going to last too long for them.
Yeah, they're winning right now.
But definitely right now it's looking good for them, and hopefully they can maintain something like that. Because the Jazz
them locking up a top three spot in the West.
I could definitely see that.
Yeah, like a Trailblazers type season?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I just don't see the Jazz with the roster they have making a long run against guys like the Lakers and the Clippers.
The Lakers are too deep.
Yeah. The Nuggets are also pretty well-rounded, and I think overall can be better than Jazz. Last year we saw that when the Nuggets beat the Jazz in a pretty damn good series over there. So we'll see there. Speaking of the Nuggets are fourth. They're 11-7 right now. They kind of rebounded from a
very
bad start. Great play from Jokic, but around him wasn't much going on. They've kind of figured it out. Murray's playing well. Jokic also playing well. So we'll see what happens there. The Thunder, they're ninth in the West. We thought this would be a very bad tank season for them. But they're actually 8-9, ninth in the conference.
Yeah.
Al Horford's actually playing pretty decent, and overall the team playing well. Gilgeous Alexander also playing very well for them. And then the laughingstock of the West and the league, the worst team in the league, is the Minnesota Timberwolves. They're 15th and have a record of 4-13.
I just feel bad for Cat.
It's just weird, though, because they got – three
they
players.
Have a good roster.
On paper, they're fine.
They have good roster.
They have Anthony
Edwards.
And they have three players averaging 20. They got Karl-Anthony, D'Angelo Russell, and Malik Beasley. And there's none of it's working out.
It's kind of weird.
It's mainly their defense, but it's still crazy.
Yeah, I thought this would be the year the Timberwolves maybe like contend a little bit.
Or at least went to 500.
Yeah. I really liked D'Lo when he was in Brooklyn.
I loved him.
I loved him in Brooklyn, and I thought that he was really the reason why they did so well. And he could have, he probably was, and maybe was like the reason why. But you pair him in with the Timberwolves, you put him with Kat, and you put him with Anthony Edwards and all these guys, and you assume, hey, they got like 40 wins with Brooklyn with D'Lo there. You assume that with this star-studded type of team that they'll play really, really well.
Their defense is just not it.
I mean, makes sense because Karl-Anthony Towns, infamously bad defender. D'Angelo Russell, even more so. Malik Beasley, Anthony
Malik
Edwards,
Beasley's just kind of average.
Yeah.
Their starting lineup is extremely good offensively and just not there defensively, and that's really what's letting them down and really dropping them into the worst position.
All right, so we're going to take a quick break, and we'll be back with some MLB and soccer. And now on to the MLB. So MLB free agency is finally getting underway. It's taken forever to get going. As we know, MLB free agency right now is one of the main factors as to why MLB is dying. I mean, it just takes so long. They need a really format it so that it's more like the NFL, the NBA, and all that, which they've been doing forever, is that
players sign pretty much immediately as the clock strikes the start of free agency. MLB, the players kind of say, yeah, we're going to wait 3 months and then maybe we'll talk about some contract negotiations. But very annoying there. But anyways, MLB free agency is finally starting to get going. The Blue Jays are off to a very good start. The Blue Jays signed George Springer, outfielder for the Houston Astros. Major, major player in their World Series runs. They signed him to a six-year, $150 million contract. Really good. His 2020 stats, he played 51 games. He had 14 home runs and 32 RBIs. Previous year, 90s in the RBIs and 30s in the home runs in a full season, so pretty good. In 2020, he also had a 265 average. The Blue Jays also signed Marcus Semien, the shortstop for the Oakland Athletics. He was third in the AL MVP race before the COVID year. During the COVID year, 2020, he played in 53 games, had 7 home runs and 23 RBIs and a 223 average. So his average went down, but still pretty good and a good pickup for the Blue Jays. Although Bo Bichette and Marcus Semien play the same position at shortstop. So it should be interesting to see what they do there. I'd imagine one of them moves to third base or something, or I don't know how that's going to work, but you definitely are going to have both of them in the starting lineup at the same time. Those guys are not guys that you want a rotation. Those are everyday players. So interesting to see there. Good signs here by the Blue Jays. They definitely want to be immediate contenders. Steven Matz, a great pitcher for the New York Mets. I'm surprised that the Mets actually traded him out here. I thought he would be a good part of their rotation. That's been pretty solid with Syndergaard, DeGrom, possibly Trevor Bauer soon. But I guess they're getting Matz out of there maybe to free up some space here to get Trevor Bauer. Anyways, Matz traded to the Blue Jays. That will help the Blue Jays pitching staff that isn't too star-studded and doesn't have a lot really there. Matz definitely can help them out. The Braves also reportedly checked in on Nolan Arenado, but earlier, before we record this podcast, he was traded to the Arizona Cardinals, the St. Louis Cardinals, and should be pretty good for them. Honestly, good for Nolan Arenado. Has been suffering down in Colorado for a while. They really haven't been able to do much with him, and he's just a really good player, and hopefully he can shine in a organization like the Cardinals, and I think Arenado could possibly take the Cardinals to the next step and actually get them back into contention like they were before. So that's going to be it for the MLB, and now we're going to get into some soccer.
Yeah, so Jesse Lingard, who has really been an outcast in Manchester United, really struggled, has been loaned to West Ham, who are currently fifth in the table, I believe. So that should be a good move for West Ham, not very risky, really. Good opportunity for Lingard to try and get some more time on the field, prove his worth, maybe try and work his way back into the Manchester United rotation if he proves that he's a capable player. West Ham are having a really good season for, I don't know how or why, but they're doing really well, and they're unbeaten in their last five. I think they're unbeaten in a lot more games than that, but just in their last five, they have won 4, drawn 1. And so that it should be interesting to see the impact that he has on their squad. Another loan in the Premier League, Martin Odegaard, officially signed for Arsenal on loan. He completed a few training sessions in leading up to their clash with United this weekend, I believe.
Yeah, he's obviously a Real Madrid midfielder, and he was spent most of the last few years on different loans, especially at Sociedad, where he really shined and was a important contributor to their impressive finish in the table last season. But then going back to Real Madrid this season, he hasn't really broken into the rotation for Zidane or anything, and he's just been lacking playing time throughout the season, so he asked to go on another loan. I don't really like how they've handled a lot of their young prospects, especially like Odegaard after he proved himself last season, and they still didn't give him any playing time despite having inconsistencies in the offense and such. But obviously this loan gives him another opportunity to shine and do well, especially at Arsenal, which is a proven Premier League team, obviously.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how he fits in the squad. A bit of a short-term replacement for Mesut Ozil, who just left. Might see a decrease in the playing time of Emile Smith-Rowe, who is a young player from the Arsenal Academy that's been playing extremely well for them, has a very high work rate, and would be interesting to see if they try and work Odegaard and Smith-Rowe into the same formation or kind of rotate them throughout like games and bring them on as substitutes to help preserve stamina and stuff. Moving on to Real Madrid, they won 4-1. Hazard starting to look back in what he should have been. He had a goal and an assist. Showed that he actually is a world-class player for one game. Hopefully he can extend that to a string of games, but we have yet to see if he does that.
Yeah, obviously he's been around Madrid. He's obviously disappointed. A lot of people are underwhelmed. Started to stay with injuries, lack of fitness sometimes in a lineup, especially struggling to score goals. And I think it's just a lot about confidence at this point. He just needs to get his footing and know that he's doing well. And hopefully it starts the streak, because he really hasn't ever been like extremely consistent in playing like in his stride as Eden Hazard. As that Eden Hazard we know at Real Madrid, he's never really gone settled. So maybe this can start something. He got a goal and assist. He played well. Benzema got two. Good win. Atletico Madrid still top of the table. They won their last game against Valencia. It's pretty impressive to watch Atletico. We're still top with the game in hand over Real Madrid. Barca, who followed them at 40 and 37 points. And Atletico still only conceding eight goals as of right now, and they've won their last five.
And there's also been rumors. Obviously, there's been rumors about Mbappe leaving PSG, not signing a contract, being kind of unhappy, ready for a new challenge. So even though a lot of the major Spanish clubs, Real Madrid and Barcelona, have came out and admitted that they're severely in a bad financial situation and really lacking funds to go out and get star players, they're still trying to figure out a way to table an offer for Mbappe, who will probably be one of the most expensive transfers ever. So it should be interesting to see how that plays out. I think if you're Real Madrid, it's probably worth the 2 years or 1 year, however much longer he has on his contract, and try and
Bring
him over on a free in the summer.
Yeah.
After his contract expires, because you really can't afford a transfer, because PSG is probably going to be looking for like $200 million.
Yeah, that's the main thing that's been fueling the speculation. They didn't really sign up extension with PSG. And the main rumors are with Real Madrid and Liverpool. So interesting to see which team he goes to, if he runs out of his contract or PSG sells him with a little bit left on it.
I think Mbappe has more interest in Liverpool, but Real Madrid has more interest in Liverpool and Mbappe.
Yeah. So it seems like Real Madrid's obviously been in the rumor for years now.
But now seeing Liverpool's recent struggles in the Premier League, they might realize that they might need to add another star rather than young talent, and they might make a splash for that. But
especially because at Real Madrid, both the owner, Perez, and Zidane have both praised Mbappe before and talked about him. So obviously, Klopp's shut down any rumors of there for Liverpool about Mbappe. Interesting to see who goes there. He's obviously still one of the best young players in the world.
Douglas Costa has been rumored to be a potential target for AC Milan, try and bolster their squad in one of the most entertaining seasons of Serie A, I would say, that I've witnessed. Because usually you have Juventus dominating at the top, and then
a race for second. Yeah.
Inter Milan, AC Milan, all just racing for second in those Champions League spots. But right now we have, I think, Inter Inter are second. AC Milan are top.
Go first, yeah.
Roma are third. Juventus fourth. Atalanta fifth. And Napoli sixth.
Yeah.
So, and they're all
only
separated by less than 10 points.
Yeah.
So that should be really, really entertaining to watch how that plays out. And there's still a lot of movement left in the table that's capable of happening.
Yeah, we're about like a little more than halfway through. Obviously, AC Milan lost their last game to Atalanta. Abrahamovic just especially trash-talking some of Atalanta's players. Didn't go too well for him as they won 3-0. Pretty good victory. I think they played better and deserved victory as well.
There's also been more transfer rumors. Not really sure if these have any weight to them, but there have been reports that Chelsea have been starting to talk with Dayot Upamecano. I think he's outside back in the Bundesliga. I don't remember for what team, but there's a lot.
He was on Leipzig.
Yeah, there's a lot of really, just about any top club has seemed to have interest in him.
Yeah, he just switched him up.
He's very,
yeah,
very well, highly rated and highly regarded as a very physical, good, and consistent defender that could really bolster some squads that are in the need of some help on the defensive end. So, Chelsea and
United, yeah.
I could definitely see going for them. Arsenal, I could see wanting him, but I don't think Arsenal can afford him.
Yeah. Yeah, he's been a strong center back, 6'1". He's been pretty consistent for Leipzig over the last few years. They bought him when he was younger, and he's been gaining attention for a while now.
It seems like he's finally about to leave. So it should be interesting to see where he ends up going.
Yeah, Chelsea going through a lot right now after they did sack Lampard.
Which I actually found was surprising. I think they should have given them more time. But
well, yeah, I know. People were criticizing him, but from the way that the club was handling everything, I thought they were going to give him more time.
Yeah. It seemed like they were going to keep backing him, give him more time.
Yeah, give
and
him
then,
like
know,
the...
Like, all right, now. Nah.
Yeah, give him what Manchester United's given to Ole. Just like more control and just like we're gonna give you time. That's what I thought, but instead
he had a much better start in the games that he managed than Gunnar Solskjaer, whatever you say it, and ended up being better off than Man United was after this amount of time managing. So I think if they gave Lampard until the rest of the season, I think he could have proved and Chelsea would have started to climb back up the table. And also the next season, I think Chelsea would be top contenders again, which is
possibly, but I guess they were just disappointed because he spent so much money, kept on asking for more. And a lot of the things that he bought hadn't really panned out.
I mean, they were all really good players with interest from several Premier League teams.
Yeah.
They all just happened to choose Chelsea, and none of them have really been able to translate
to the Premier League
to the
style.
Yeah, to the style of play that the Premier League has. It's just so from the reports from a lot of people that transfer in, it's just so much more physically demanding, so many more headers and aerial challenges. And
really
hasn't paid off for Chelsea because they bought some really world-class talent, and they just haven't panned out.
Especially Werner and Havertz.
I would like to see them develop
work
out for them because it would be a shame if such...
because they were highly...
They were some of the
scouted,
top talents...
pursued, yeah.
Yeah, pursued by a lot of top clubs.
Instead, they choose to go with Tuchel, who obviously last managed for PSG, where he was sacked about like 2 years ago.
And replaced by Pochettino.
Yeah.
He's
a solid manager. He was at Dortmund and then with the PSG.
He has a very good record of bringing out the best in attackers.
Yeah.
So I think what Chelsea were going for is we have our midfield and defense. Well, their defense is but they have their midfield kind of figured out. If they can figure out how to get Tuchel to really help the attackers, and especially the newer ones, with their technique or whatever it may be that they need to like work on to help them succeed in the Premier League. And I saw that their first training session with Tuchel, he used like really small soccer balls to help Chelsea improve their passing accuracy, their technique, their ball control, and also their tackling accuracy.
Yeah.
To help concede less fouls. Which is seems like a
that was all pretty smart definitely part of it. Oh, because it was only a 18-month contract, like a year and a half. I'm pretty sure they just needed like they just wanted to finish the season off with a more like established coach. I guess they were just tired of experimenting with Lampard and just wanted an established coach to try to win some games now.
Yeah. And last thing is more just rumors. Not really sure if there's any weight behind them, but Ainsley Maitland-Niles, a young talent at Arsenal. He's a very versatile. He played right back, and play center mid, play defensive mid. There were reports that he told his teammates he's leaving. Not sure if that means he's leaving on loan, which there's been plenty of rumors about
other
Premier
League
clubs trying to take him out on loan. But there's also been rumors that he was going to get sold. There were rumors that Arsenal were going to sell Eddie Nketiah and Ainsley Maitland-Niles trying to sell some of the younger talent for bigger prices so that they can kind of go in and get more, like, already established defenders, because that's really what they've been needing, because they don't really have the funds to get some of the
a lot of clubs necessary. Obviously struggling financially, like a lot of companies in this era of virus not being able to sell as much stuff, no stadiums, no events, no season ticket holders, all that.
And I think that is all for episode 34. Thank you for coming to listen. Make sure to check us out on social media. I'll let Billy plug all the social media.
Yeah, guys, thanks so much for listening to the podcast. You can go follow us on Instagram at Sports Report Podcast. You can follow our Sports Report page on Twitter at Sports Report Po 1. You can follow Alejandro at Alejandro_SRP. You can follow me at Sports Bet Billy. You can follow Aiden at add an SRP. And yeah, guys, thank you so much for listening. Stay aware of the podcast clips that are going to be on YouTube. Thank you guys so much for listening to Sports Report Podcast episode 34. We'll be back next week. Thank you guys so much. And we couldn't do it without you guys.